Blog Talk Radio.
Attention! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard! Keep your arms and legs on the inside at all times. Hold on tight! The show is about to begin.
Hello, everybody. Cindy Bishop here with the Coaching Chicks, and we are thrilled to have Jim Perkins here today with us with SWBC Mortgage. Now, Jim has been in the mortgage business for over 30 years, and today we're going to talk about VHDA and FHA Plus program loans, and he has done so many of them, I can't tell you. He has taught many classes on mortgage financing, and in particular the VHDA and FHA Plus program loans. He was at one time the financing instructor for a major real estate firm in the D.C. area and is currently certified by the state of Virginia to teach financing to real estate agents for continuing education credit through my school, Cindy Bishop Worldwide. When you work with Jim in getting your loan, it is important to him that you understand the process and know what to expect. This is where his education background plays a huge role in providing you the knowledge that you need and the confidence to know the program loan program you are getting is the right one for you and for your client if you are a real estate agent. Nothing more important than the team you create. Well, welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
You are very welcome. Well, I'm excited because I know you're a great lender because I've referred some people to you, and they think you walk on water. So you've done it to yourself. You do a great job, which is why you are here today. Definitely a trusted team member with any real estate agent. So we're talking about VHDA and the FHA Plus program. So tell me, Jim, who is VHDA and what is their mission?
Well, the VHDA program, VHDA stands for Virginia Housing Developmental Authority, and it was established by the Virginia General Assembly, and the mission is to provide alternative financing, affordable financing, to first-time home buyers and low- and moderate-income people. They also do some other programs as far as providing builders with affordable funds to build affordable housing for rental and Section 8. But the main thing that we're focusing on today is going to be the financing programs and the loans that they provide to people that are looking to buy houses.
Okay, great. So I heard the buzzword for people to make it affordable for them to buy a home. So I guess the next question would be then, who is eligible to use the VHDA program?
Well, generally speaking, what they're looking at, they have a number of different criteria, but the first time would be your first-time home buyer. And the way they classify a first-time home buyer is going to be somebody that has not owned a portion of their principal residence in the last 3 years. So if they owned a home, say, 5 years ago and sold it, and for the last 3 years they've been renting, then they would actually be eligible to use the program. Another would be somebody that sometimes we see that people have gone in together and bought an investment property. Now, as long as it's not their principal residence, then they still could be eligible to use the VHDA program and qualify under the first-time home buyers program on that.
Okay. So we're not only – there's not only eligibility for then the buyers, and it sounds like those people who have had short sales and foreclosures and bankruptcies, you know, once they've waited that period, and especially considering they're probably in rental properties, then a lot of them, boy, we need to get the word out because a lot of them are going to now be eligible to be in that first-time homebuyer category again versus somebody that's never owned a home. So that's really valuable in a big way, you know. So
question,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say exactly because, you know, the short sales and foreclosures, they've structured some of the guidelines to be a little bit more flexible. You don't have to wait that full 7 years anymore. But some of the eligibility requirements also are, you know, you have to be a U.S. citizen, or if you hold a green card, a permanent resident alien, you would still be eligible for the program. And then non-permanent residents that have a Social Security number and are eligible to work in the United States are also acceptable in most circumstances.
Wow. Okay, so lots of people really qualify.
Right, and the other key thing is, obviously, they'll be buying a property in the state of Virginia.
Okay, right, because it is a Virginia state program. But I bet I've heard from other agents in other states that a lot of them have some kind of program. Maybe not this, but they agents should be inquiring in their state exactly what special programs there is, not only on the state level, but also on the county level, because a lot of times there's county programs as well that help those that need help, which I think is pretty terrific. Now, taking into consideration that people need to be eligible for this program, I imagine there are some limitations on what properties are eligible. So I guess the question is, what properties are eligible for this program?
Well, generally speaking, you're talking about your single-family detaches, townhouses, and condos. Condos, you have to meet certain qualifications as far as your standard financing. Usually they're looking to see that it is Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac approved. But generally speaking, that would be the same type of qualification a condo would need to go through for regular financing. The real area is that they're limiting the sales price. And the sales price, the restriction is going to be in what they call the Washington, Arlington, Alexandria MSA, is $500,000. And that actually goes pretty far west and also pretty far south as far as the geographical area. Now, there are some areas that they call targeted areas, and these are the areas of the state that they're looking to have people move into that are kind of economically depressed. And in those areas, they are willing to waive at times the sales price restrictions and also the income restrictions that a person, if they're coming up against the limitations on that.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's amazing. That's good to know. So the income, the price limit then, typically, except for depressed areas, is $500,000, then you're saying?
In this area. Like, say, if you were down in the Richmond area, then you would be dropping down to, say, $375,000.
Okay,
if you were down, depending on the area of the state. So it's best to find out what area your property is located in. But if you say the Washington MSA, which is the Metropolitan Statistical Area, then you're talking a sales price of $500,000, which goes all the way down to past Fredericksburg if you're going south. So it covers a pretty large area.
Okay. Now, what about the income restrictions? Is it a pretty vast list of depending on the number of people buying, or how does that work with income restrictions?
Well, they have a list of, whether it's two or few people in the family or three or more people in the family. And, again, it goes by geographic area. So if you were looking at the Washington, D.C. MSA, you'd be looking at two or fewer people would be a maximum income of $121,900. And if you had three or more people in the family, it would be $142,300. So what happens is that if you have a husband and wife and a child, then that would get you into the three or more people. They do count, though, the income for the total household. So if you have another family member living in the house that has income coming in, they're going to count that also. So sometimes you have families living together, so they're looking at the total family income when they're looking up at those restrictions. Now, as you go to a different geographic area, then those income levels will drop in different parts of the state.
Okay. Now, are those the only restrictions for the VHDA program?
No, you have other restrictions that they're looking at. You have, the first-time home buyer requirement that we talked about, the income restrictions, the sales price restrictions, but then there's also like a net worth restrictions. In other words, they don't want your net worth to exceed more than 50% of the sales price of the property that you're buying. There are no co-signers allowed, so you have to be related in order to by blood or marriage in order to be in the property, and they have to live in the property. So it's not a program where like an aunt or an uncle would be able to co-sign not living in the property and help their niece or nephew or, you know, a daughter or son buy a property. So they would have to live in the property. So they call that, you know, no non-occupant co-borrowers. Now, on the FHA Plus program, the way you can structure the program is the borrower can actually get in with very little or actually no money out of pocket, but they will be required to have at least 1% reserves, and that would be 1% of the sales price in reserve. And that would be a bank account, savings, checking account, some type of funds that they might have. They don't have to use it, but it just shows that they have to reserve or have that in reserve, that it's available for them. And okay,
Go ahead. I just want to pull the two together because I don't understand something. Is the VHDA program used with the FHA Plus, or are they two separate programs?
Well, the VHDA actually has a standard programs. They have an FHA standard program. They have a VA standard program and your conventional program. Now, the VHDA Plus, what they do is they combine the FHA program, which allows a 3.5% down payment, and then VHDA will actually provide a second trust at the same rate and term as the first trust, for that 3.5% down payment. So the person would literally be putting no money down. And the way we try to structure it is that if the seller is willing to pay the closing cost, then the purchaser can get into the property where they're getting 100% financing, and then the seller's paying the closing cost. So the out-of-pocket cost is going to be very little or actually zero. Now, in some circumstances, you have where the seller's not willing to pay some or all the closing costs. So they, if a person has good credit and qualifies, they will actually give them another 1.5% of the sales price to pay for some of the closing costs. So they'll actually, the financing on the property would actually be 101.5% financing. So that actually makes it much more flexible for the borrower getting in with little or no money out of pocket.
Fantastic. It really is. So hopefully everybody heard that very clearly. And then you're saying, though, they still have to have the 1% reserve. But that's their
Correct.
Money in reserves. It's not like
right.
they've been giving it for closing costs or something. That's really fantastic.
That's correct.
That's
not money that they actually have to use. It just has to be in reserve. So the way we structure a lot of these loans is that the borrower is actually getting in with little or no money out of pocket.
Which is a tremendous advantage, and I'm so glad that they make it restrictive so that it's not being abused, because these are the people that need it. Getting back on their feet or first time out to buy a house, and they've never bought a home ever, but especially those people that are coming back into the market after having some bad experiences. So I've heard something about recapture tax. What is that, and how does that recapture tax work?
Yeah, this is something that scares a lot of people from using the VHDA program. But basically what it is it's a tax on when you go to sell the property. But it's very rarely that it would take into effect or that a person would have to pay the tax. But what they do is there's a number of different formulas that you have to go through before you would even actually pay the tax. But it's based on your income when you sell the property. And what happens is it's a sliding scale. So every year that you own the property, the maximum income that you would have to have before you start paying a tax goes up. So just to give you an example, say if you were buying in the Northern Virginia area, and if you were selling your house, and say if it was on or after the second anniversary but before the third anniversary of the closing, and it was a family of two, originally you had to have, you know, less than $121,900 as far as family income for people two and fewer, and your income would have to go over $141,561 before you would even be considered for the tax. So say at the time you were selling it, you know, after the second and before the third anniversary, say if your income was $138,000, then it would be absolutely no tax on the property. And that goes up. It's for the first 9 years, or excuse me, after the ninth anniversary, then there is no tax. And it's a sliding scale, too. The maximum that you would have to pay would be 6.25% of the sales price of the property that you're selling, but that's going to be of the net proceeds. So they would allow you to subtract out the cost that you paid in order to buy the house, and then also the cost that you had paid in order to sell the house. And then it would never be more than 50% of your net proceeds. And when I say it's a sliding scale, because it goes up from the first year's 20%, then 40, 60, 80. After the fourth anniversary and before the fifth, it becomes 100% of that 6.25, never to see 50% of your net income from the sale of the house. And then it starts dropping down again, then 80, 60, 40, and then after the eighth anniversary, it's 20%. So, and because of the sliding scale, like you said, after, say, the sixth anniversary, your family of two's income would have to be over $172,000 in order to even be considered for the recapture tax. So the way it's structured, it's very few people you see will actually get hit with that recapture tax. And the reason that it was explained to me why they actually had that recapture tax in there was because when the program first came to existence, you had a lot of young professional people, as an example, say a doctor who was working his 4 year of residence in a hospital, and his income was very low. And then after, and so he'd use the VHDA program, and then after the 4 years, his income would skyrocket very, very high. And then they would sell the property and make money on that investment. So VHDA say that's not the idea behind the program. We're trying to get people into the house that's going to be their home, not as an investment vehicle to make money down the road. So that's why they said they put that recapture tax in there, so that if somebody was in those circumstances, they would have to pay a little bit back to the program. And actually, that money goes directly to the IRS.
Got it. Okay. So based on all this information, which has been quite a bit, would you say that, you know, who would you say, I think we kind of went over who would be a good candidate for VHDA, FHA Plus, and it sounds like, to just kind of highlight that a minute, just to kind of give some examples, I think we've already talked about two, the first-time buyer, you know, newly married couple. Somebody graduates from college, they get a good paying job, and but they can't afford much, they haven't had time to save, and or the person coming out of some harder times, short sale, foreclosure, bankruptcy.
Exactly. I mean, that's the whole idea behind the program is to help people get into properties, because normally your first-time home buyer doesn't have the cash in order to be able to make that down payment. So it could be somebody that is coming out of school and has, you know, a reasonable job, and they have their schools that they can use as part of the history for employment, but they don't have that money saved for the down payment. So even, you know, even if you're buying a property, like say is $300,000, that normal 3.5% is like $10,500. And then if there was any closing costs. So the unique thing with the PLUS program is that VHDA will give you that second trust to pay that down payment, but they will also give it to you at the same rate and the same term, 30 years, as your first trust. Generally speaking, when you see a second trust going behind a first trust, it's amortized over a 15-year period, and the rate is usually 2 to 3 percentage points higher than the first trust. So it's not as attractive. So this one makes it very, very attractive. And you're using the FHA program to qualify the people, so there's a lot of flexibility as far as them being able to qualify for the program.
Okay, well, that is fantastic. So just in summary, let me make sure I heard this correctly. Using the VHDA FHA Plus program, we can reasonably expect a buyer using this program specifically to virtually pay nothing out of pocket except for their holding at the 1% reserves. And in addition to that, the worst case is probably if the seller won't pay all the closing costs, they can get part of that wrapped into the loan.
That's absolutely correct. So from that perspective, it works out very well for the buyer trying to purchase the house. Now, they will pay upfront money, like they'll pay the cost of the appraisal, and if they're going to have a home inspection, they would pay that upfront, but it can be structured that they get reimbursed for those at the time they go to closing. So by the time it's all said and done, they look at their bank account, they're basically will be spending you could structure it in such a way, and we do many times, where they're spending $0 out of pocket.
Okay. Well, that's my gosh, this is fantastic. I mean, gosh. And I think that I can't remember if we talked about this, but is the rate for this VHDA FHA Plus loan lower than if they were to go get a traditional FHA loan?
Generally speaking, it's going to be a little bit higher than your standard FHA loan because you have the second trust. So you're doing 100% financing or 101.5% financing. So anytime you're going above the maximum financing that you normally see, you're going to pay a little bit more as far as the interest rate is concerned. But it's still a very aggressive interest rate, and you can actually add points to get the interest rate down. So now you're talking, you know, the VHDA FHA Plus program is still below 4%. So it's still a very attractive program for people that are going to qualify for that. And the thing that it makes it attractive, too, is that VHDA has changed a lot of the guidelines as far as the underwriting is concerned. So it used to be, I can remember when we first started using the VHDA program back in the 80s, you had to send the loan down to VHDA to get it underwritten, approved, and it wasn't unusual to take 6 months to get a VHDA loan closed. Now it's very easy to do it in a 45, 60-day time frame without any concerns.
Well, thank goodness. Really, I didn't. That would be a long time to wait to buy a house. Really, it would be. So, but yeah, even if the rate, I mean, they people have to understand that it's a premium product to be able to get that much financed in today's market. I mean, and the interest rate is insignificant if you think about it compared to them having to wait to save money for what. Because they're going to go out and waste their money on rent. So anyway, I just think that's a really good program. So, does the seller have any reason to be concerned that the buyer is using a VHDA program aside from asking for closing costs being paid, which is going to be pretty much any offer that comes in anywhere today?
And that's the really nice thing about the program is the changes that have happened to VHDA over the years make it not a concern for the seller. Like I said before, you could spend 6 months trying to get a loan closed, where now it's not unusual to do it within a 45-day time frame. That's I'd say standard practice now with the VHDA. Also, too, the FHA has changed some of the guidelines, so you don't have to be concerned about fees that the borrower cannot pay and then the seller would have to pick up. So there's no hidden fees that are going to come to the seller because of using this particular program, that the buyer's using the program. So it works out really good. And what it does for the seller, it actually makes much more people available to buy his property. Even the people, they qualify. So the if you're looking at it, say, as a pie, the percentage of the pie of people that are going to be able to purchase the property is much larger. So the chances of them getting a full price contract is going to be much higher.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, well, anyway, this has been very enlightening today. And everyone, this is Jim Perkins with SWBC Mortgage. And, Jim, would you mind taking a minute to tell them how they can reach you?
Sure. I mean, the best way to reach me, my email address is jperkins@swbc.com, and my phone number is 703-615-2607. If you don't get me, you just leave me a message or email. Shoot me an email, and I'll always get back to you.
Yeah, because you're an excellent educator. So if they have any questions, they need to call directly and ask those questions. And plus, you have regular workshops and educational events to help agents learn how to use financing to even get better lead generation by having that knowledge. So, Jim Perkins, thank you very much for being with us today. And we will close now, but everybody go and get help from Jim so that you can get more business on your bottom line for your yearly goals in the real estate business. Have a super day.
Ladies and gentlemen, push the safety bars up and exit the ride.